We all love mob movies. Scarface, The Godfather, the list goes on and on. But there's one movie that speaks to me above all others. Donnie Brasco starring Johnny Depp. In season one of Deep Cover, we discovered the real story behind Donnie's time undercover with the New York Mafia and what it was like spending 6 years with some of the wildest wise guys you'll ever come across. I'm your host, Leo Rossi, and I've spent my life behind and in front of the cameras creating stories about the mob. This season, we're going even deeper into the Donnie Brasco story. We'll learn more about the man behind the persona, Joe Pistone, and his time as the most decorated undercover agent in FBI history.
This week on Deep Cover, the real Donnie Brasco, Joe and Leo are joined by Eric, Joe's friend and colleague from up north. Eric gives us a deep dive into the history and operations of various families and street gangs across Canada.
Hi, listeners out there. We have a special guest today, and Joe Pistone is going to introduce him. He's a dear friend. They've known each other a long time. I mean, everybody that comes on this show is Joe Pistone's friend. I don't know. He's making me feel a little insecure. But Joe, introduce our special guest.
Leo, meet Eric. Eric, meet Leo.
Hello, Leo. How are you?
Hey, I'll tell you something, Eric. Great accent. Great accent. If I ever have to play a Canadian, I'm coming and hanging with you, babe.
That's it. The North guy. The guy from the North.
That's it.
Eric is coming to us tonight from Montreal, Canada. Eric and I have been friends for over 10 years. We met on a working on a case when I went up to Montreal, and we stayed pretty close since then. A little background on Eric for the listeners and for you, Leo. Eric became a Montreal police officer in August of 90. He was a patrol officer, you know, doing the normal things, squad car, marine unit, intervention unit. In 99, he got promoted to a detective in the South Division drug unit. Worked all high volume crimes, undercover cases, sources, informants. In 2001, Eric was promoted to detective sergeant. And there he was in the Criminal Intelligence Service in Canada, National Organized Crime Coordinator, National Strategy Intelligence Sharing Major Project Coordinator, and became involved in investigations of the mafia, the Italian mafia up in Canada. And then in 2005, he went to the Quebec biker unit. And then he went into major long-term investigations on the Hell's Angels biker gang. He handled cooperating witnesses, undercover agents, wiretaps. I mean, this guy's got bona fides, Leo, from here to Canada, you know, from California to Canada. And I'm not done yet. And then 2009, he gets promoted to supervisor of the North Division Drug Unit. 2012, he gets assigned to the Charbonneau. I think I'm pronouncing that right, commission. And that was a commission up in Montreal that investigated the infiltration of the mafia into the construction business by bid rigging. Then 2014, he went on to head the Montreal Airport Intelligence Office. 2018, he went on to get involved in major drug cases. And then guess what, Leo, in 2020, he retired. Eric, welcome to the show, Eric.
Well done, my good man. Well done. One of my dear friends has a bar in South Pasadena. I used to live in Pasadena, California. And his name is Joe Griffin. I know his family, as he tells me, he had a couple of brothers that didn't fare too well with the law. And then he had another brother who has a referee of boxing matches. Do you know the name Griffin?
Sure, in Montreal.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh, we know them all. They're related to the West End gang.
Ah, that's, yeah.
He's an Irish guy.
Oh, yes, he is. Oh, well, yes, he is. He has straightened his whole life out. And to tell you how much he has straightened it out, he has and this is no bullshit, 11 children. He married a girl from Mexico, and then he came back to the States, and 11 children. Boy, did he straighten out, huh?
No wonder. He didn't have time to do anything else.
Not a chance. Yep.
What's interesting, the Italian mafia up in Montreal hooked up with the Bananos that I was with in New York. And when I say we, the side I was with in the Bananos, you know, there was a, there was a war going on between two factions to take over the family. And when the side I was on decided to whack the three capos that were the opposition, they brought in a couple hitters from Montreal. Is that right, Eric?
Sure. That's what that's the Vito Rizzuto case that we did in Montreal in 2004 when asked by the U.S. Authorities, we arrested. Actually, I wasn't there. I participated in it, but there was my good friend Nick Milano that arrested Vito on the 20th of January, 2004. They went to knock at his door at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they arrested him on those charges that he faced in New York City in 2006, 2007, which he pleaded guilty. So obviously the link between Montreal and the Bonanno family goes back in the mid 50s and 60s with Carmine Galante showing up in Montreal all the time with the Caccioni family, which was the predecessor of the Vito, the Rizzuto family. So by mid-50s, Galante was coming to Montreal all the time. Montreal being a French-Canadian city, they had a lot of links with France, which at the time was the Marseille Mafia and the Corsican, which were dealing with the labs of heroin. So that's when the French connection started, you know, between the Europe, between Marseille and France, and then the Corsicans, and then bringing the stuff in Montreal, the drugs and the heroin in Montreal, to obviously, you know, provide the products to New York, which is the biggest market in the world for drugs.
Now, Leo, who do you think accompanied Galante up to Montreal? Who do you think his bodyguard was?
Vito Rizzuto.
Lefty Ruggiero.
Oh, Lefty, your buddy Lefty.
Yes, he was.
Yep. Oh, my God. Well, you know, this to me is fascinating for a couple reasons. There was a book about Vito Rizzuto. Joe, I think you gave it to me. And they were going to make a movie about it.
I did, yeah.
And I was very interested. I wanted to play Vito Rizzuto. I'm an actor in my, in my nightlife, I'm an actor. But so I wanted to play him, and Anthony LaPaglia ended up playing him. Mm-hmm. And I saw the movie and everything. The five families in New York don't have a stranglehold on violence, because you guys up there, wow. Wasn't Rizzuto's father shot through the window and at breakfast time or something?
Actually, yes. Actually, it happened. Yes, it did. What happened is that if we look at what happened in Montreal, is that the Calabrians, the Calabrese family that was named Caccioni, were at the stronghold over Montreal. What happened is at one point, a Sicilian faction came from Italy and they installed themselves in Montreal under the Calabrese family that the Cartoons were. Obviously, it's a bit like what happened in New York, you know, with the Zips. They decided to do their own things their own way. So that created an issue. And that's when Paolo Violi, which had taken over from Vic Petroni, that's when Paolo Violi started to seek some approval to get rid of the Sicilian faction, which obviously he didn't get. We can see that we know historically that he seeks some approval from Italy, from New York, from the Bonanno family, but he never got the go to expel, because obviously the leader of the Montreal faction of the Bonanno family was technically able to expel anybody that didn't feel, you know, the job properly. But today the story says that he never got the okay to whack him. What we know is that in 77 was a sit-in, and after the sit-in, Nick Rizzuto and his whole family moved to Venezuela, but he left his old Sicilian crew in Montreal, and then we started to see the mob war going on, and we saw that the Calabrese faction eventually lost it, and we saw Paolo Violi getting shot, you know, the old Italian way with a sawed off 12 gauge behind his head. His own bar that he had sold, but he was invited for a card game, and he went to the card game, and from wiretaps that have, because those days there was another UC guy that was living above in the apartment above the bar, and it was a guy named Bob Menaur. He was playing the role of an electrician that was living on top of in the apartment of the bar. He was able to do the wiretap all from the apartment that was in the mid 70s, and he was able to put some tap in the bar. That's when we were able to know that that invited him to the card were also the ones that had, you know, that pulled the trigger on him, which was the old Sicilian crew related to the family.
Wow. I mean, this goes back. We're talking 50s, 60s, 70s. Wow.
70s, up to the 70s. Then the Rizzuto took over for, he reigned over Montreal for almost 15 years. And right after that's when we saw, obviously, Vito going and do a hit for the Bonanno family. So I think that was the proof that they had gained their stripes, you know, their stars.
Yeah.
How strong is the mafia in Canada now? I mean, you know, you got Montreal. How about Toronto? Toronto's a big city.
Toronto is a big city. Toronto is still ruled by the Calabrians. Okay, they're still ruled by the 'Ndrangheta, which is the Calabrese organized crime.
I actually read, you know, I have to do research, that la 'Ndrangheta they are like the wealthiest mafia clan of them all, and that's really saying something. There was charts and this, the different things they're into and the drugs. And look, we all know that you've dealt with and Joe's dealt with mafioso. They're killers. Mm-hmm. But apparently the boys from the Calabreses have a special knack for that. Have you found that?
Sure. I go to Italy. I travel quite extensively in Italy, and I'm going to meet people there. The biggest difference between the mafia as we know it and the Calabrian 'Ndrangheta is that the 'Ndranghetas, they work in silos, okay? And to be part of the team, to be part of the crew, you need to be blood related, which is the main difference.
Exactly.
So, yeah, go ahead, Joe.
No, you're exactly right. That's the difference with those guys and the other clans, is that they have to be actual relatives, correct?
That's it.
Wow.
That's it.
So we are saying purity in the bloodline.
It's either brothers, cousins, uncles. So if at one point you rat out your partners, you don't only rat out your partners, you rat out your whole family, which has a different meaning than when it's only somebody that you know. And the fact that you're working in silos, every village has their own silos and their own family ruling the mob world. So no matter if you attack, let's say as law enforcement, you attack one silo, you'll get rid of one silo. That's it. You cannot go up the ladder. You cannot go up the pyramid because there's no pyramid.
Boy, that's, you know, the way that you laid it out, I can see why they've had not a lot of rats and a lot of monetary success. Wow.
That's it. So that's the biggest difference.
I'm told right now that over in Italy that they're the biggest biggest money makers, the strongest mafia group over there.
If I could ask you, Eric, Joe read all of your achievements, and you put a dent in a lot of criminal organizations. Now, Joe did the same thing with the five families, and he had a $500,000 contract for his life put upon him by the five families. Have you been threatened? Has there been word that you have had a contract put on your life?
Actually, no, I was never threatened. We met many, many times with organized crime figures. Vito Rizzuto was one of it. We never had any problems getting him available for a coffee or for a discussion, which we were always surprised we could access him, but he was always very accessible. One thing that I see that it is different in Montreal, I think it's different in Montreal than in Italy, and maybe in the US, maybe you guys can tell me, is that most of the organized crime figures in Montreal, they're all setting up for a better futures of the kids, okay? So instead of, if I compare to Europe, to Italy, in the old world, where people are generation being mobsters and keeping that way of life, okay? In Canada, what I saw is that people tend, and Vito was the prime example. His father was a mobster. He was a mobster, but he always wanted his kids to have a better life than he did. So two of his kids are lawyers. The third one was doing enforcement on the street for the family. He eventually got killed, but we always saw that he was looking for a better future for his kids. He wanted to legitimize the activities and the life of his kids, which is not what I see in Europe, where mob families from generation to generation, and they don't want to change that. They're the king of the village, they're the king of the city, and they're going to keep it that way. That's the way they live. Over here, I think that the ones that left Italy and they came here in the 50s, in the mid-50s, they wanted a better life for themselves, but obviously they want a better life for their kids. So they have tendency to push the kids to do better things, not get involved in, at least not at the street level, but not to get involved that much in organized crime life. You know, they didn't want them to get in life. Involved in the life.
Deep Cover will be right back after this short message. And we're back with Deep Cover.
In the mafia today, it's taken quite a hit. There are other organizations coming out. But comparing, and this was always curious to me, comparing the organization of the mafia, and you certainly know all the trees from the different families and from Calabria to Sicily. What about the Hell's Angels? Are they as organized?
They weren't, but they are now.
Wow.
Because obviously the mafia had a head start of maybe 40 years. On bikers, you know, outlaw motorcycle bikers, but not anymore, because in Montreal, in Quebec, and I would say maybe not as much out west and maybe not as much in Toronto, but in Quebec, okay, Italian mafia was very, very strong, but you cannot work on your own. At one point or another, you're going to have to deal with the other ones. And that was what Vito was the master. He was a mastermind in getting everybody involved in the same venture. And he always said to everybody, there's enough money for everybody. That's what he was good at. Okay. He was charismatic. He was bringing people along, and he would get a certain piece. And obviously he's the one that got the most of it when the biker war started in Quebec. For 10 years, from 99, let's say even a bit more, from 95 to 2009, when we finished Project Shark, but for that period of time where the biker was going on, obviously the Italian mafia was the one getting the most of it because there was not much attention on their work, on their businesses. You know,
who's stronger today, the Italians or the bikers?
As we speak, I would put $5 on the bikers.
Oh.
because what happens at one point is that the Italian got involved in, like it always happens, in some issues within the clan, within the Italian factions. And then what happens is that when you start to have issues within yourself, there's some mob wars going on. You lose money, you lose interest, you lose power. Meanwhile, the bikers were there and they took over.
So what illegal activities is the mafia in Montreal involved in?
They're still involved in the same illegal gambling, loan sharking, drug extortion, murder, corruptions. What the Italians had more than anybody else was the access to public figures, public officials. That's what the Italians were always better than the other ones. But it's always a game. You're good today. You don't know if you're going to be good tomorrow. It always depends on the individual that runs the show.
Right.
Today, I would say they're not as strong on that corruption side.
Well, it's the same here in the States, you know.
Mobsters are younger. They don't give a shit about, you know, the officials. They don't see it the same way. Everybody thinks that they can do it themselves. Obviously, it's not always the way it is, you know. When you look at the old guys, you know, the old school guys, when you see at the old school guys where they were taking care of people so those people could bring them something back. If you don't take care of the people around you, you don't get nothing back, obviously.
Well, you, I could see from your achievements, you were in for bid rigging and everything that the New York families were notorious for. They had the window scandal, the every other scandal, concrete scandal, scandal. And it's just something that all of these scandals show just what you're saying, that the mafia went through the government channels. Who could they contaminate? Who could they? Okay. Yeah. And wow. And you just did it all up there, sir.
But we did it all. You know why? Because in the time I was a police officer, we lived everything. I started with the Italians. Then there was the biker war when we put a lot of effort, because the biker war brought 160 murders, and the murders they were bringing were bombing, car bombing, house bombing, bar bombing, and it all ended up with the death of an 11-year-old kid when he was standing. He was a bystander of a bombing of a Jeep, and when they got the car explode, when the car exploded, the kid got killed. That's when, obviously, it's always the same thing. The authorities, when everything goes. Even if there's a lot of crime, the crime rates, they don't put money. But then when the public opinion comes up and says it has no sense that a kid died, then what do?
Changes
they give
everything.
You carte blanche. They put the money in and then they say, guys, you need to get rid of those guys. So that's when we got the funding and run after the bikers, which was the worst thing they ever did. They shouldn't have done that because it brought them so much heat that at one point, all the efforts and all the money was going towards them.
Are the bikers mostly involved in the drug trade?
Sure.
They control it?
Drug trade, they're mostly controlling everything. I would say Italians are still good in importation. But like I said, with time, bikers are getting more and more involved. And they're getting their getting their ways to bring in the stuff. So, they're getting some experience. 20, 30 years ago, the Italians had the experience. Biker didn't. Today, bikers do the same thing as the Italians used to do. And then we got, in Montreal, we got the street gangs, which at this point are not very much organized, but give them another 10, 15 years, they'll be doing the same thing as the rest. Joe, you know, you work the streets. If you don't control the streets, you don't control the turf.
That's exactly, okay? Yep, that's it.
You can't do nothing. And the thing is, our Italian kids, our Italian organized crime family kids, they're all go around with nice suits, nice cars, nice girls. They have tons of money to spend. While you're doing that, You're not controlling the street. Somebody else takes over.
Yeah.
And there's no secret. If you don't go to work every morning, somebody else is going to pick up the spot, you know?
Yep. Well, Joe, in Joe's trials, when he was testifying and all, one of the attorneys said, talking about the commission of the mafia, he said, you get rid of the heads on the commission and all the mafia ends up being is a street gang. And just what you said is spot on.
Just to give you an example, as we always speak about New York and Montreal, we got another figure from New York that came over and thought that it was going to be easy in Montreal. And it was Sal, the iron worker, Montagna. I don't know if you know him, Joe.
Yeah, yeah.
But he showed up in Montreal while Vito was in Florence, Colorado. And he said, hey, nobody wants to fill in the shoes of the boss. I'll do it. He says, I know how we do that job, you know. He says, I'm going to go for it. And he tried. But the only thing he couldn't figure out is that in Montreal, it's not the Italian mafia that runs everything. You got so many other organizations. I was talking about the West End gang, the Irish people. They do control the port. So you don't do things. You don't say that you're going to do your things the way you want to do it. You need to share with everybody. So he came in, tried his things, did a few shots, then started knocking maybe at the wrong doors. So it didn't take long that the people that he associated with turned around, and then there was another issue and he got killed. You know, he got called in a meeting where he never came out of. He was shot. He crossed the river in the cold weather. He crossed the river. He got it to the other side, but never was able to go up the hill to go to go back. He got shot. He died on the edge of the water, you know, on the shoreline.
That was symbolic.
It was.
Yes.
But that's the way it is.
Yeah.
You know what? Because at one point, there's an organized crime figure told me, he says, over here, people, they come over and they think that because you're Italian, the bikers are going to wash your cars and the street gangs are going to, you know, shoe shine your shoes, which is not the case.
Not anymore.
Over here in Montreal, for $250, somebody's going to put a black guy's going to put a bullet in your head. So there's no such thing. I'm the boss. And the other ones, you know, you all work for me. It doesn't work that way. And we can see it now. It's definitely not working that way. Presently, there's a share of the market and there's a share of the turf.
You spent, well, you're 30 years. I guess you retired after 30 years, according to your resume. What are you going to do in retirement, man?
I'll probably enjoy a bit of time off and do other things. I always get interested. Then maybe you're going to invite me to your show another time, so we'll be able to talk. Otherwise, I'll go for a drink. I'll go for an espresso coffee, and I'll see what I can do.
Well,
there's always I got good colleagues that also like to have a nice coffee, so we can sit down and chat and do our hypothesis what's going to happen next.
All the times I've been to Montreal, I've been to the restaurants, the best restaurants, Italian restaurants, big and little joints, and the best Italian food. Because my man, he may be Canadian, but he's also Italian. He's French. How many languages you speak, Eric? Tell Leo.
Four. I speak, actually, I don't speak them all well. It's like my English is not as good as yours. But like I always say, I can do the same speech in French, in Italian, and in Spanish. So I'm not that bad.
No. Well, I can extend an offer to you. I'm involved as a regular in a series that Joe knows the creator, director, and it's called Gravesend. It's on Amazon Prime. And we are going to be filming in Brooklyn in September and October. I would love you to come down. Joe will be there showing up when you're there. And we can test some of Brooklyn's food, Bamante's, sure, and all that. And we could have we could have some laughs, and you could come on the set. Now that you're a man of leisure, you know,
you can. Leo, if our prime minister opens up the border, I'll surely go and meet with you guys.
Well, hopefully by then he will. Oh, God, praise Jesus. You know, also, now, I did a film in Montreal, and I enjoyed myself. But there was always talk of Montreal seceding from Canada. Where are you going to go?
No, it's not going to happen no more. It's been something that was in fashion in the 70s. But I can understand being Italian and speaking French. I can understand the political avenue of all that. But I think that was old stories. Wow. They're old stories. Yeah.
This has been very enlightening to me, and I sort of know, you know, a good deal about the mob, the mafia coming from Philly, and that whole crew down there, and hanging around with Mr. Pistone for 20 some years. But you have been very enlightening on something that, I mean, a lot of people don't know that in Canada, I filmed in Vancouver, Calgary, Montreal, and Toronto. And it's a lot of country to cover. And it's so divergent. And you touched all the bases, my man.
I did. But that was the fun of it.
Yeah.
Doing it at all.
I can't wait to meet you. I really can't, man. And don't forget, I got the shirts. I got everything. In your honor, buddy.
It covers it all. No. Hey, Eric, before we go, I want to thank you.
Sure.
And
thanks.
Say hello to my good friend, Nick, your partner. And if you ever talk to the ex-prosecutor, tell her I was asking.
Yeah, she's doing good. She's the one that did the best out of all of us. She's a minister now with the Quebec government, so she did good. Don't worry.
Yeah, well, just give her my best.
Okay.
All right. Thank you, Eric, and I hope to see you in September. The invitation's
open. Sure, in September.
You got it.
Let me know.
Okay.
Let me know. Thank you. It was nice having me on your show.
It's our pleasure, Eric. God bless.
Thanks to our producer, Monique Nethington, sound designer Casey Franco, music and voiceover by me, Camille Stennis, and executive producers Maddie Stout, Rudy Solo, and MBB Media for putting this episode together. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for more Deep Cover updates, plus exclusive photos and content.